This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Nā mai, haere mai, kia ora tēnā koe, Free FM 89.0 on a Sunday afternoon. How is your day going? Welcome to our world, guests on various subjects this afternoon. And first of all, congratulations to Cambridge owner Anne Brown. Her horse, I'm a Wonder, won yesterday's Pakaranga Hunt Cup Steeplechase at, well, a fabulous race at Tarapa yesterday. Her and her late husband Ken won the race numerous times when it was at Ellerslie Racecourse. Congratulations, Mrs. Brown, as everybody calls her. Great Cambridge person, great personality, has won numerous races with those famous brown and red colours. Everybody enjoyed Ken riding over the jumps. Not a flash rider, but he got his horses home. Of course, we pay tribute to the late Ken Brown. And, of course, he was the former president of the Waikato Racing Club. Again, congratulations to Anne Brown, Peter Brosnan and his wife, who trained the horse. I'm a Wonder has now been set for the Great Northern Steeplechase at Te Rapa Racecourse. Of course, they race over the jumps no more at Ellerslie Racecourse. The hill has gone, which is sad for New Zealand racing. I'm a Wonder is, well, her dam, of course, won a Great Northern Steeplechase. So it all goes into cheap horses. Hey, congratulations again to Anne Brown of Cambridge. Moving on. The opinion is mine. Column comment, Waikato Times, August 19. Residents had enough as police hunt racer Rampier. Well, we know that particular ute was stolen. The couple in the picture had nothing to do with it. The headline was that residents are calling for stricter action against illegal street racers as police hunt those seen in the white ute. Well, of course, we know now that the ute was stolen. It was found with a new paint job. Several videos, and I've seen one of them, from the incident in Horatū, just north of the city, are making rounds on social media. What do you have to do? You've got to take action, police. Stop mucking about. Stop these boy races, because from Horatū, they come into Hamilton full tick down Victoria Street. Victoria Street, Hamilton, is not a raceway. These people, they're wanting Hampton Downs to be open to them so they can race their cars all over the city. Forget it. You're not worth to be driving around in your car. When some of these riders do go to court, I hope the book is thrown at them. We'll talk more about this with Dwayne a little later in the afternoon. So, folks, I have no sympathy for the boy racers or girl racers. You're idiots. Full stop. More on that a little later in the afternoon. So, yes. So there'll be more about that if the case goes to court about the stolen ute. Yeah, no. The police have got to get tough. And Mark Mitchell, get your man pants on, mate. You make a lot of noise, but it goes nowhere. And this goes for some of your colleagues, Mr. Mitchell. I'm sick and tired of listening to some of the bleating from other members of the cabinet. I won't name any more, but Mark Mitchell, get your big boy's pants on and do something. Don't be another Judith Collins. It is 15 minutes to one. 2371 28 to go. August 25, 2024, 1948, Frankton. The scene of a twister leaving three dead, multiple injuries, and massive property damage. 1921, Rolling Stone, Charlie Watts dies 80.
Well, I've told you once and I've told you twice, but you never listen to my advice. You don't try very hard to please me, but what you know, it should be easy. Well, this could be the last time. This could be the last time.
Today in 2012, Apollo 11 Commander, yes, 2012, Neil Armstrong dies.
Make love, you baby, in an hour's time. Cause I'm a man, I spell it M, A, M. Love like you, will it never miss? We love you, baby, you can't.
This day in 1944, after 4 years of occupation, France is liberated.
Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be better off than you are. Or would you rather be a mule? A mule is an animal with long, funny ears. Kicks up at anything he hears.
His back is brawny, but his brain is weak. He's just plain stupid with a stubborn streak.
This day, 1943, Britain begins bombing Germany. This day in 2005, Hurricane Katrina makes landfall in Florida.
My soul so weary when troubles come and my heart burdened me, and I am still and wait here in the sun. Until you come.
In Edinburgh, this day in 1930, Thomas Sean Connery, the future James Bond actor, was born. He died in 2020. So today we celebrate Charlie Watts, who died this day in 2021.
Well, I've told you once and I've told you twice, but you never listen to me. This could be the last time. This could be the last time. Maybe the last time. I don't know. Oh no, no.
FM 89.0, independent community media, cosmopolitan news and views. The last time with the Rolling Stones celebrating Charlie Watts' death this day in 2021. Well, more on the Frankton Twister, August 25, 1948. It smashed cars, uprooted telephone poles, uprooted trees, three die, 80 are injured. Cutting a path through Frankton, 100 to 200 metres wide, through the CBD, Hamilton East, and it damaged houses in Hamilton East, and then last seen heading towards Tamahere. Yes, the Twister. I don't know if there's any people in Frankton who were around that day. You may have been a schoolboy that time in Frankton with the Twister. Well, the Wellington band Quincy Conserve in the lineup, Malcolm Heyman and the unpredictable Bruno Lawrence. Heyman kept the band members under control, fined them for not doing what they were meant to do, including Lawrence. Lawrence, of course, was fired from the band. He had written tunes for the band and played drums. The late Bruno Lawrence later started movies and was a member of Blurter, the band active between 1967 and 1975. Here's the voice of the late Malcolm Heyman.
Breaking all the wheels on the freeway, shopping around downtown all day, found a way to make a real deal on a wheel. Summertime trying to bum a ride, catch a dime from an ex fella, hell of a time, bumming a ride in the summertime. Backed up traffic, static on the radio, way go, power lines intertwined, made me miss the punchline, feeling fine, whoa. If you know where to go, if you know where to go. Love on a speed in the city, summertime's mean in the city. Baby, it's great in the city, just a little bit of hate, what a pity. You can make it high if you're ready, make it tonight if you really wanna make it away. As long as you got the feeling there, as long as you got the feeling there. Well, I said city's full of whiz kids. All right. Switch lights, fast tracks, give me down a quarter mile. People going to see the show. 30 seconds gonna go, feeling fine. Whoa, whoa, whoa. It's all right in the city. People look nice, kind of pretty. Even though it's a little dirty, it's all right in the city. If you know where to go, if you know where to go.
So revealing. you kissed. I never knew the years that I had wasted till we kissed. I never knew the kisses I had tasted.
But now I see I was waiting.
Of the late Ray Columbus leading out the Invaders at 1 minute to one with Till We Kissed. Oh, it's got other titles along with it, but we'll mention that another day. Been watching a lot of video of old music videos this week, and I'm intrigued watching this guy called Kayu Sakamoto with Sukiyaki, because they couldn't pronounce, the English couldn't pronounce the Japanese translation to the song, so they just called it Sukiyaki. It went to number one in the US in 1963. It was a big hit all over the world. Of course, sadly, Kayu Sakamoto was the victim of a plane crash. He died aboard a plane that crashed. I forget what year it was, but at 1 o'clock, we all know and we all love the song. It was a big hit in New Zealand too. This is Kayu Sakamoto, 1963. And this is Sukiyaki. FM 89.0, independent community media. Yes, that song grows on you. It's still 1963. I was a schoolboy when that came out, and it was on the radio all the time. The late Kayu Sakamoto and Sukiyaki. Good afternoon, Mel Droskett. You recovered from our road trip the other day.
Yes, that was well worth looking around.
Well, talk about that later.
We noticed that now they are conducting a sale of cheap books. Well, they have to be there if they come between a whole box. You can get a whole box of books there for $10, and that raises money for worthy causes. And coming on Thursday in Hamilton, there's an outstanding chamber music concert, a rare opportunity in Hamilton. Austrian composer Franz Schubert's prodigious creation of 600 songs, 21 piano sonatas, operas, church music, and 15 string quartets is, despite his lifespan of 31 years. Think how much more music he might have made. He was at his peak 200 years ago. The program we've left for Russell Armitage to explain.
Hey, Russell, he must have gone through a lot of pens. Sorry, quills and musical notes. These things, I've seen the pictures. They went through a lot to write these fabulous compositions.
Really? I hadn't, I never really thought of that, but, and I'm glad, Mel, that you just mentioned, because it occurred to me when you did say that it is, in fact, 200 years since he died, isn't it? Wasn't it 24? I mean,
31 years of age.
1824, was it? Yeah.
Oh, the date. I'm not sure.
No, I should know that. But anyway, it's very close to that. So I hadn't thought of that when I.
What did he die of, Mel? Do you know?
They say syphilis.
That's sad. The program. On a happier note. Auf den Strom.
Yes. Well, as you say, he wrote so much stuff. It's quite amazing, and his songs are probably the peak of that musical form, piano and voice. But he wrote some two very unusual works, which I've wanted for the 40 years of my putting on chamber music concerts to include in a program, but it's never been possible. The Auf dem Strom, From the Storm, is for piano, tenor, and French horn. And when I heard our local French horn player who works at DSIR, Sergio Marshall, play the Mozart horn quintet with a string quartet in the Fairfield Mirai, I thought, here we have a fine horn player. That's one work I can tick off. And then the other work is, which I know well because I did the clarinet part a bit in my youth, is called The Shepherd on the Rock, Der Hirte auf dem Felsen, and that's for soprano, piano, and clarinet. And there was a young clarinetist who just finished Hamilton Boys High, who was very talented. So I put it to them, and I found a soprano, Isabella Reed, who's won several awards in her short life so far. And I couldn't get a tenor, so Isabella, it was quite acceptable, Isabella's doing both, which is good for her, really, both these beautiful, beautiful works as a soprano. And then I got an excellent pianist, just finished his, I think, doctorate at our wonderful Waikato School of Music, Jonathan Dunlop. He's now working at St. Paul's Collegiate. He is the pianist. And of course, the piano is key because it goes through the whole program. And it was first program scheduled to play about 2 months ago, but then Jonathan got COVID and we had to postpone. But what's so special about this concert is that he'll be playing some of Schubert's impromptus. Now, the word impromptu was only invented during Schubert's lifetime, and it was first used for some piano compositions by a Bohemian composer, which really, of course, I was immediately attracted to that, called Wojciech. And he wrote some these things called impromptus, which the publisher called impromptus. Schubert heard them and was greatly impressed. And he wrote some himself. In fact, then subsequently many composers wrote these works for piano called impromptu. And we are going to have three of Wojciech's impromptus in the program, and I suspect it'll be the first time that Wojciech's music is heard in New Zealand. He was a very similar age to Schubert. They became extremely good friends, but he also died young.
It's so tragic when that happens. The talent is gone.
Yes, yes. So that's next Thursday, and it's now been moved to the Academy. And thanks to the good officers there, it's been made available at an affordable rate. And so we hope we can get a fairly good audience. That's Thursday, this coming week on the 29th, 7:30 at the Academy. You can pay at the door. If not, just leave your name and email and I'll send you a bill.
A Schubert celebration concert.
Yes.
Sometimes chamber music is seen as inaccessible to all that... The devoted few.
Yes, it's true. It is true. It was, of course, the way in the centuries ago that most people heard music, sitting in their front room, all had pianos and hearing people make music. But it is because I suppose most of the great composers that people would hear in symphony concerts, playing symphonies, the concertos, they all wrote chamber music. And in most instances, they are probably their finest works. I've always been keen since a university student in Auckland when hundreds of students would go to the New Zealand, what was then called the New Zealand Chamber, no, it was called something else. Anyway, the major body that put on chamber music around the country, and we had big audiences. And there is, of course, the National Schools Chamber Music Competition, mm-hmm. which is extremely alive and very well, with huge numbers of school children forming groups amongst themselves and performing at an amazing standard. So there is an appeal there. But at the moment, all the hundreds or thousands that have gone through what's now called, I think, the community, it's a trust in Auckland, the Community Trust, it was for many years called the Westpac, the Community Trust Chamber Music Competition. Thousands, they, at this stage, don't seem to be appearing in the audiences. But never mind, I mean, there's always a good, hard, solid core.
Yep. You talk about Auckland. Did you ever go to concerts at the dedicated music chamber in the Auckland Town Hall?
Because yes, of course. I mean, most of this, of the two... There were two seasons in Auckland, or two subscription series in Auckland, of about 6 or 8 concerts each, and both were sold out in the town hall, which is, talking about over 1,000 people. And overseas artists would come here and be amazed that in this, what they thought was it is a small country, but didn't realise it had such a strong interest in good music.
Mm. You gave up the clarinet.
I gave up?
Did you?
No, David, what?
You were learning it as a musician.
Oh, yes. Well, I decided when I went to England, as we all did in those days for our OE, that I loved music a lot and listened to it. I should do something about, practical. So I bought a clarinet in London and had lessons with a clarinet teacher, and she lived just north of Hampstead Heath. So I'd go up there on the tube after work, have a lesson, and then I would go early in the morning to the office, and because I couldn't really play it in the small apartment I was in, or flat sharing, so I would go into the office in the morning and practice my clarinet, which before the others arrived.
Good on you.
Things are much easier in the 60s in the working conditions in those days, long lunches, things like that.
We know the clarinet was Mr. Rakabilk, of course. And
Yes.
And did you ever go, are you into jazz? Did you ever go to Ronnie Scott's?
I've never really found jazz... for me, appealing. I just don't like the sort of improvisation, and of course, it's associated with, in a way, I suppose, nightclubs and that sort of thing. And for me, it's not substantial enough.
Does that bear out the expression "square"?
I don't know.
Are we square? If I am,
quite happy being square.
Thank you. I thought you might be.
I've always, even from the age of, I've sort of finished my sort of pop music listening, I suppose, at 15 at Auckland Grammar with people like Everly Brothers and the Beach Boys and Elvis Presley. I enjoyed it. But then I discovered classical music, the first thing I did as a grocery boy, delivering groceries, as you did in those days, in a cardboard box, my first earnings, I bought myself a little portable gramophone player.
Oh, this is brilliant memories. Who is your favourite composer of all time? We've got to ask you that.
Well, it always began with Mozart, and for most of my life, Mozart's been the one I have admired enormously, and I still do. And his opera, Così fan tutte, which is now being performed probably more than any of the others, but didn't until probably the last 30 years, is my most loved of all opera. But I would say now I would play more Haydn, who was a teacher of Mozart, and has been underrated, I think, because of Mozart probably eclipsed him, but his symphonies and string quartets are wonderful.
Well, what about Beethoven?
Oh, yes, of course. Absolutely wonderful. The string quartets are fantastic. His opera Fidelio is a masterpiece, and I'll always go to that whenever I see it's on. I've also loved Dvorak very much. Let me think. Yes, and sort of a lot of early music like Byrd and Purcell and so on. But it comes down to and Schubert. But it comes down, I suppose, to Beethoven, Mozart, Haydn.
Well, we're going to play a piece by Ludwig von Beethoven.
Well done.
It's called 25 Scottish Songs.
Oh,
the lovely Lass of Inverness. I don't know if you've heard that one before, but
yes.
So
yes, he wrote a few based on Scottish.
Yeah,
all 25 songs.
Yes. So this is from 1997. Also rode Loch Nagar, celebrating, of course, the mountain peak just in front of the Balmoral Castle up in Aberdeenshire. So he did write some fabulous music surrounded Scotland. So any other...
Now you mention, it's interesting, Sarah Walker, because that is an example of one musical form that now doesn't get audiences, and that's the solo recital by a singer with a pianist. And when they first... When I was a student, we had great singers coming here, Elizabeth Schwarzkopf and Fischer Dieskau and Victoria de Los Angeles and others, and they would fill the town hall several times over. But Sarah Walker was, when I was in Wellington, she was brought out by the NZSO and did a couple of solo recitals, and that was... I suppose in the 1980s, and that was, I think, the last time that there has been a solo, would have called it leader, a solo song recital in New Zealand. They just do not bring in, the opera does, but they do not.
Another musical performance coming up.
Oh yes, we mustn't think, now you mentioned Beethoven, but the NZSO will be playing in Hamilton on Friday, a terrific program which includes Beethoven's Pastoral and, what's the other work they're playing, is it Tchaikovsky? It's at the, it'll be one of the last to be, where they'll use the event centre across in Claudelands, because we hope by the end of next year they will be in our magnificent new...
Regional theatre.
Uh-huh. And I see now going past today that they're starting to put up the shape of the auditorium.
Oh, brilliant stuff. I hope parking's all right down that end of town when the people come to the pay.
Oh, the parking's fantastic. Look at the huge car park in Knox Street just around the corner. And there'll be more angle parking. I've been pushing that to the council, and we're hopeful that there will be... I mean, Knox Street could be angle parking both sides of the street, for example, and there are many other places like that. No, there's plenty of parking. After you've got the underground car park at Civic Square... It's there. You've got the. I think people have overstated the parking thing too much.
And we won't talk about local politics after Christopher Luxon gave all the New Zealand mayors a hurry up down in Wellington.
Yeah, but unfair, I think, and unthinking. But then again, he comes up with these sort of... it was unfortunate that he did that the conference was in the... I've been to it. I think it's called Takina, a stunning convention centre. The exterior, it's opposite Te Papa. It's absolutely a stunning building, beautiful. But it hasn't met its targets for conventions because of COVID, and then after COVID, the change in people's sort of lifestyles, which will go on for a long time. Conventions don't, there aren't as many conventions as there used to be.
To digress
yes. A
moment, what does Russell Armitage, a cathedral, and a pear tree have in common?
Well, I have to say, I've just been to a wonderful service. I used to go to the cathedral services quite a lot because I enjoy the music there and I enjoy a good sermon. It's good to feel humble once a week. But there was a planting of a pear tree, one of the earliest, well, not the earliest Anglican missionary, Benjamin Ashwell, came to the Waikato in 1829 and set up a mission school at Taupuri, very well regarded. And as a result of his work there, a lot of the local Māori became more literate than the immigrant farmers that were coming in from England. Anyway, he, in 1847, I think, acquired a pear tree which had been brought out from England, and he planted the pear tree there. Well, the original pear tree still exists. It was sort of, in a way, it's all, people have, well, some of the owners on the land, which was Maori land, knew it was there, but then Bruce Mackay, who was working for the Hamilton City Council, no, maybe in the District Council, saw the pear tree and realised it was the one, and got the regional council to fence it off to stop it being damaged by stock, much to the owner's appreciation. Anyway, from that, several cuttings were made and they were planted around places where Ashwell worked, like the Taupuri Church and so on, and they all survived. Unfortunately, the one that was planted at the cathedral some years ago, because of the nature of the earth or something, it died. So today we had a replanting of a grafted apple pear tree, and I must say the one at the Taupuri Church is incredibly prolific, and they are delicious, but they're not like pears in general. They don't last a long time, but they are delicious. So we had a lovely service there, and what was so wonderful is that the owner of the land and where the pear tree is a direct descendant of King Tapio.
Yeah.
And I was so pleased to meet him because my two greats grandfather, the Reverend William Gittes, actually spoke and gave a very large eulogy in Te Reo at Tapio's tangi.
Yeah, great stuff. We've got the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra coming up, conducted by Ron Goodwin.
Oh.
Going to go play the old Te Araroa Suite for you, and this is great stuff. But first of all, we're going to pay tribute because my friend Dwayne was going through his shopping list and he asked me, do you have golden crumpets? So this is for Dwayne.
Oh, them golden crumpets, oh, them golden crumpets. I had one for my breakfast, I'm gonna have one with my tea. Oh, them golden crumpets, oh, them golden crumpets. Pop them in the toaster, a treat for you and me. Yeah.
New Zealand Symphony Orchestra and the Aotearoa Suite. It's 24 past one. Impressive music from the late Ron Goodwin, Mel.
Yes, it is rich music, and we now have a program, and it's broadcast every Monday at 10 o'clock, I understand, on Free FM 89.0. Devoted to classical music.
And again, from the Rod Goodwin Conductor New Zealand Symphony Orchestra, you know this tune, his version of Now Is the Hour. Thanks to Russell Armitage this afternoon.
Did we mention the NZS? We didn't. We did. And it's the Pastoral Symphony. And I do wonder who designs these wretched websites of people, because you never get the essential information. All it says on the NZO's website is that it's Pastoral of Beethoven and Tchaikovsky. Well, that's all very helpful. But if you do go to the text, but there should be quite clearly stated what the bloody program is. They never do. It's hopeless. I'm one of the people that design websites are actually users of the product that they're promoting. I suspect they're not. Like the people that design bus stops at the regional council never actually use a bus. I do. Anyway, it's a terrific program, because the Tchaikovsky is the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto. So it's a really top rate program.
We rely on you, Russell, for observing the things that we missed and keeping us up to date on our toes for the opportunities that are coming. And that, of course, is one that we can appreciate if we're appreciation for classical music. Perhaps the Schubert Celebration Concert, Thursday, 7:30 at the Gallagher Academy of Performing Arts. Thank you. Thank you so much, Russell Armitage.
And if you're lucky, if I remember, I will bring in my classical CD set next week, and it has got that particular piece of music by Ludwig von Beethoven. I will bring it in with me next week. I'll get a reminder from Mr. Driscoll if I don't. So we'll play it next week if I have time. Anyway, back to the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra. Bye-bye. Thanks, Russell.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure. Bye.
I wish I could continue playing that, but that's fabulous. Now Is the Hour, the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra, under the baton of the late Ron Goodwin. Good afternoon, Robert.
Good afternoon, guys.
From the New Zealand International Film Festival and Hamilton Film Society, we welcome Robert Clark to share again his experience of the international and New Zealand cinema screening so far, and to preview what's still to come. This year's release of a film from the small independent kingdom of Bhutan and protectorate of the Republic of India. It's called Agent of Happiness.
Thank you, Mel. There are actually two movies from Bhutan. We're spoiled this year. The first one was called The Monk and the Gun, which I actually saw on Thursday. Agent of Happiness is on next week on Tuesday. It's about, and this is a little bit incongruous for New Zealanders perhaps, it's about a government employee who is charged with the responsibility of measuring happiness in Bhutan's many citizens. An operation which I suspect is somewhat like measuring poetry, as in Get Poet Society, a little bit futile, which is basically what she finds. I think it's going to be rather amusing. The other movie, The Monk and the Gun, is a sort of political satire, if you will. So what the basic stuff is that the Bhutanese king has decided that we are going to have elections in Bhutan. So the problem is, of course, that you can schedule elections if you want to, but the population has no experience with elections and so requires training.
New ground.
Yes, and a mock election mixed in with some gun smuggling and some Buddhist rituals. So it is a very nice movie.
The Monk and the Gun.
Mm.
Mm. Screens next Friday at 4 o'clock. When the Light Breaks is a joint production from Iceland, Netherlands, Croatia, France, and it screens tomorrow.
Yeah, interestingly, the thing in European cinema these days seems to be for almost every country in the continent to sponsor movies, so I'm surprised there's only five people paying for it. But anyway, the movie is a somewhat somber exploration of what it's like to be grieving when you're a teenager and your grief is basically a secret. It's about two people who are grieving the same person who unfortunately dies in an accident. Iceland does seem to do some very nice introspective work, which for the most part isn't awfully cheerful, but this movie should be really good. I think in terms of exploring the theme of guilt and how people relate to it. My first introduction to Icelandic cinema was a movie called Noi the Albino, which is also somewhat depressing in tone. It's about a reclusive teenager in his world, and unfortunately ends tragically with his village being hit by an avalanche, but yeah. I'll leave that alone. But the thing is that the reason why these sort of cinema appeal to me is it's the reality of it and the pathos, if you will.
This is the same country that brought us the pop singer Bjork. So we know what Iceland can bring us, whether it's movies or music. So
Bjork's very talented. The other thing that Iceland at the moment seems to be known for is a certain volcano that insists on erupting every 9 months or so, it seems.
Haven't they got a mountain that you can't pronounce?
A mountain that you can't pronounce?
What is the name of?
If you can pronounce Icelandic place names, I'll be impressed.
I won't try. Not today.
These films that involve many nations are very common now. The cooperation is evidence there.
It's partly about the collaboration of people from those different countries, and also part, I guess, of the fact that making a movie these days is not a cheap business. And a lot of these countries aren't particularly rich, so the opportunities for, say, EU-wide funding of movies gives a voice to smaller countries that might not actually make a movie.
Well, the thing is, on Friday night, I went and saw the latest episode of the franchise of Aliens, which is now out, and they used a face of the late Ian Holm, who appeared in the original movies, using artificial intelligence. They found an actor to portray his voice, but this is using the late Ian Holm has caught a bit of a stink with the critics. Why should they do this as a tribute to him?
In parallel, I last night had occasion to watch the ninth Star Wars movie, and you had Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and a couple of the other original cast members. And I'm trying to think chronologically here, but I think Carrie Fisher had actually died by that point. Yep. So it's become a thing, and it was actually my first knowledge of a dead actor, as it were, appearing in a movie was when River Phoenix died.
Yep.
And the last few scenes of his appearance apparently were after the fact. But usually historically the Dodge has been just, you know, film someone from the back and pretend it's them.
Yeah, of course. Did Alec Guinness turn up in the latest Star Wars thing? Because he was Obi-Wan Kenobi, remember?
No, he wasn't in this one.
Maybe they thought that his comments on Star Wars, he hated the movie altogether. Anyway, so more movies this afternoon?
The landscapes that are depicted in films are often available for nothing. Sunsets, here, the film that you mentioned, that is When the Light Breaks, that joint production involving Iceland. Now, in that is a scene, opens with a romantic, quiet moment a couple watching the sunset over Iceland's still waters.
Mm.
That sounds very enticing.
It does, but...
It's loaded with emotions, memories.
If you think about it in terms of photographic processes, you sort of wonder, you know, exactly how many days did that person have to sit there for that perfect lighting? Because... You know, if you've ever tried, like, for example, to guess Hamilton's weather.
Yeah. Hey, just reminds us, Mel, that we went through Kaipaki at sunset. We watched the sun go down the other night, and it's beautiful, isn't it, watching a sun go down?
Something in humans is open to appreciating it. It must.
The particular scene you're describing, I think, is the scene that occurs just before the gentleman's death, though, which makes it even more poignant, if you will.
Mm.
That was their moment, and then... Our protagonist wakes up the next morning unaware and, you know, just becomes gradually aware that something is wrong through the actions of our colleagues.
A sad film.
Mm. But sad films can be life-affirming.
Yep.
A whole range of human emotions. We'd like to thank you, Robert Clark, for acquainting us with What's to Enjoy in the International Film Festival.
I hope you join us next week for more.
These festivals...
It might happen.
Are these festivals profit enterprises?
I think the basic motivation of the Festival Trust is in terms of presenting diversity of cultures and experiences. I'm under the impression that the last few of our film festivals haven't been exceptionally profitable, you know, sort of like breaking even, etc. But the Hamilton one became more difficult because, of course, Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, Dunedin, bigger markets, bigger audiences, and hence the struggle we had to get a film festival here. So it was gratifying to see on opening night that we sold out 3 screens.
That's impressive.
It isn't. Hey, Robert, join us next week, please, and talk more about movies. And, well, last week had an off-air discussion about the longest place name, talking about place names, and the longest place name in New Zealand. This is it.
Mary Joker on the hilltop playing a flute. Cooler than Goodman, boy, he was beaut. And the thought that he thought in between each toot was tamata fokka tangi hanga ko wa wa wo tamata ya pokai fina wiki tana tahu.
Coming up, we hope to talk to JD about rail, because rail cars are back in demand.
I'm an ordinary joker.
And they're going to be between Tamaranui and Stratford. We've got the evidence of rail carts.
Tamaranui, Tamaranui, Tamaranui on the main trunk line. You can get to Tamaranui going north or going south, and you end up there at midnight, and you've cinders in your mouth, you've cinders in your whiskers, and the cinders.
We'll be talking to JD very, very shortly. That's Tamaranui on the main trunk line. I do want to talk about JD about the rail carts. It was featured in the Cambridge News this week. But from one country, we go to the country of Zimbabwe.
People of Eastern Highlands, Zimbabwe, are in a moist and misty part that rises into mountains. Here is where new settlers migrate from parts of Zimbabwe, severely affected by the longer-lasting droughts year after year. While they used to raise enough food for their own families in the past, now they'd starve if they stayed where they were, on lower lands nearer the coast. It calls for calm amid an escalating climate crisis. An indigenous journalist reporting on BBC and Al Jazeera is Andrew Mambondian, who asked people of the highlands how they see Zimbabwe's new settlers fitting in with the current farmers. He quoted the response of a senior citizen: "We'll not chase them away. They also need to feed their families. But soon we will run out of land to graze our livestock." this situation of food being a reason to move on, even though within the same nation of Zimbabwe, it's difficult for a government to help people who lives are being distorted by climate change. It's not so much a political issue as it is a geographic one. What do you say, our guest, God help Motiero Nagshano? Greetings.
Oh, greetings.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Yes. The peoples of your land, some on the lowland, but you come from the Eastern Highlands.
Yeah, I come from a place called Buhera. It's in the Eastern Highlands, close to the border with Mozambique. So, but my grandparents later moved about 50 kilometers inwards to a place called Gutu, which is probably, I would say, maybe better than that. But yeah, they are doing what they can in order to survive.
Do you remember the house you were born in?
I was born in the urban area. So my father was a policeman, so he worked in the city. So I was born and bred in the city, but every now and then school holidays would go to the rural areas.
Was it a good life, your boyhood?
Oh, for me, because most of the time I spent in both city and urban, so it was always changing. And you know, for boys, if it's changing, it's good.
So, when you went into the country, you like boys from all over the world. You ran around, swam,
yes,
did naughty things, etc.
Definitely. Looked after the cows and the goats and the chickens, went to the fields and being taught the nitty-gritties of life.
And probably wandering around and running around half naked as boys all around the world did.
I can't remember, but I wouldn't be surprised that was the case.
God help. You are now a volunteer broadcaster.
Yes.
On Free FM 89.0.
Yes.
Your family moved to New Zealand on hearing positive reports of the Kiwi lifestyle.
Yes.
What do you think of the Kiwi lifestyle?
I think it's great.
You do?
Yeah. Kiwis are very great, down-to-earth people. That's one thing I picked when I came here. Kiwis are very good, down-to-earth. They don't show off even when they are well off. So, and their day-to-day is very down-to-earth, which I easily fitted into.
And, of course, Zimbabwe is known for its cricket team also. They play...
Yes.
They play great games against your neighbour, South Africa, but yes, you can play cricket also.
I've never really given my hand to cricket because you must realise the most popular sport in Zimbabwe is soccer. Then other sports come after that. But then you find, for some reason, over the years, cricket and rugby and golf have attracted a lot more sponsorship. Mm-hmm. So internationally, you find Zimbabweans are well known for cricket, for golf. If you remember Nick Price,
yes,
and Tim Price,
yes,
yeah, even rugby. Mm-hmm. A lot of our players have been poached by the South Africans. Of course, they won't like me saying this, but there is a lot of players from Zimbabwe who ended up playing as South Africans, doing very well there. So rugby, cricket, golf, they are well known for that. But the most popular sport in Zimbabwe is soccer.
And of course, doing some research for my other program this week, I noticed that all the world pop music, or from all around the world, US and UK, you had your own Zimbabwe pop chart, where all these international songs were on your pop charts on the radio at the time too. Okay. Do you remember those times?
No, can you say that? I missed your question.
The UK and the US release all these pop charts,
mm-hmm,
fabulous songs from days gone by.
Yes.
Zimbabwe is also featured on the pop charts.
Okay.
They have their own pop chart with all these songs that, yes, were big in the UK and the US.
Yes,
so,
yes.
And your own music. So give us a breakdown of the music you play on your show.
The music I play on my show is Zimbabwean music, but you can find, if you listen to my show, that it has been influenced by different genres from other countries,
mm-hmm,
other African countries and internationally. If you look at the young musicians now, they are no longer borrowing from other countries. They are borrowing from all over and they're creating their own fusion of like a genre of music called Zim dancehall. You will find it originate from reggae dancehall, which is from Jamaica. but they have recooked it in their musical kitchen. Now it's come out as Zim Dancehall and only found in Zimbabwe.
So Bob Marley's popular in Zimbabwe?
Very popular, because on Zimbabwe Independence Day on April 18, 1980, he had an all-nighter for the new incoming government. He played a big show, and Bob Marley was very, very popular, still is very popular in Zimbabwe.
Your program is proving very popular. Is that because Zimbabweans here miss home?
I've never really checked the demographics, the people who listen to my program. I know from my relatives and friends that is popular with them. I wouldn't be surprised that a lot of people are listening as Zimbabweans. And I have got people who stay in the UK and South Africa and Botswana and USA, a few people, probably less than 20, yep, 30, who say they listen to it.
So what? When your show plays, when does your show play?
Every Thursday at 10 p.m. New Zealand time.
So what's the time zone in Zimbabwe at the time?
In Zimbabwe, it's 10 hours behind. So if it's 10 p.m. here on Thursday, it's 12 noon in Zimbabwe.
So maybe someone in Zimbabwe, and I don't know if you've got any feedback, they are listening to you online, listening to your voice.
Yes.
And the music of your country.
A couple of people have said so that I know, but with the numbers that I've seen of the listenership, it's definitely a lot more than Zimbabweans.
You're top of the pops.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
It's called, the show?
The show is called The Zimbabwe Music Journey, and it's brought up by me. So the name I use, my full name is God Help Mutero Nyashanu. On this show, I call myself Chief Changamire Mutero G. Nyashanu. Chief, because I come from a chieftainship in the Eastern Highlands in Zimbabwe, Chief Nyashanu. If you can check that on Google, you'll find it.
I'm intrigued because your first name is God. That wouldn't go down well with some people in New Zealand because it's on the banned list of names. So, Chief, we'll call you Chief.
I'm surprised because my name, whenever I tell people in New Zealand, it creates some interesting conversation.
Well,
and it has helped me in job interviews a lot.
In your chiefly line, you derive from a people who were very strong in Africa,
yes,
over centuries.
Yes.
Shona.
Yeah, the Shona people. They are found mostly in Zimbabwe, but you find if you start going to Kenya, Tanzania, and if you are looking at this, languages like Swahili, which is used in Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, there are a lot of similarities with their culture and our language. So you can see that's where we came from, Burundi, Rwanda area. So, and then as you come down to South Africa, until you get to just before South Africa, when you start getting Zulus and other people.
Yeah, about the God name. Don't blame me. Blame births, deaths, and marriages. They put restrictions on what you can call your child. But, hey, you're welcome to us.
I'd say it's a perfectly good name.
Hey, thank you for coming in this afternoon. We'll let you go and record your show.
Yes, thanks a lot.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
It's an honour you inviting me here. Yeah.
Our privilege. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Cheers.
Right. Next up, I hope we are going to speak to JD because I want to talk about the rail carts on the Tamarinui line.
I'm an ordinary joker, getting old before me time. For me heart's in Tamarinui on the main trunk line. Tamarinui, Tamarinui, Tamarinui on the main trunk line.
Tamarinui on the old main trunk line. Why? It intrigues me because rail carts, according to the Cambridge News, part of our road trip this week, that Mel and I, we picked up some Cambridge News. Rail carts are back in demand. Forgotten World Adventures, a Cambridge couple. It's going to be on the line between Tamarinui and Stratford. So I've shown the picture to JD. What do you think, JD, when you get on one of them?
Okay.
This is for railways that otherwise might be lacking the throughput, the patronage, and would otherwise be closed and ripped up. And the rails are at least being preserved.
Yes.
Ever been on a rail cart?
Once just out of Rotorua, which was quite a popular one. Haven't been on the one on the SOL line, which is the Oko Kura line, but we will do it one day. But that is a pretty interesting article.
Well, you can take that article with you if you like.
You've been travelling around yourself lately?
A little bit.
What's coming up?
Well, coming up on the 1st of September, which is a Sunday, Bush Tramway is open just for anyone to come and have a day out. We're running as normal. So, yeah, it will be a good day out. I don't know what the weather will be like as of now, but should be good.
Hey, winter's easing.
And with you, another of those who monitors what's happening on the railways of New Zealand, Daniel, from Te Awamutu. Yes, Daniel.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What's new? I know one thing, that we're in the closing half hour of the Rotary Book Fair. Now, there are books that have been written about rail in the past, and they get embodied in these places where they can be bought very, very cheaply in that. I'm aware that's been happening today at Te Awamutu.
What else?
Yes, I thought about going down there, but I decided to come here instead.
So. Hey, talk about your hometown. Mel and I were there on Thursday, and we met one of the town barbers. What some story she told us. A lot of it we couldn't repeat on the radio, yeah, man, you've got an impressive town. I hadn't been there for a long, 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 long time, but hey, your town is looking good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the positive comment there.
Does it have a rail station?
No. It has the platform, which is very beaten up.
Only that. The remnants of a once very...
Well, the reason is that no passenger trains stop there, so... In the past, I'm talking like years ago, they did have a station, but it was demolished. Then it was replaced with a bus shelter, but that got vandalised. So about 3 or 4 years ago, it had to be taken away, which is a real shame.
Mm-hmm. There's a talk around bringing back the night trains. We used to call it once the Limited Express, and later it was... the names change so often, don't they?
We're talking like the mid-90s, but I do understand that the daytime overlander, as it was known, did stop at Te Awamutu. So did the Northerner, which is the evening train from Auckland to Wellington, Wellington to Auckland.
Hey, thanks to you guys for coming in. We're running out of time, so we have to talk to both Dwayne and Trevor before we go at 2 o'clock. Join us for afternoon tea afterwards, and look at that. You can take that article. Anyway, before we do go, let's pay tribute to Charlie Watts of the Rolling Stones, who died this day in 1921. This is him on the drums. Get no satisfaction, Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones at 3FM 89.0. It is 2:08 for his weekly comment on things to do with traffic. Good afternoon, Dwayne.
Good afternoon.
What's the latest?
You've been taking an interest in the numbers of cars that are stolen, burnt out, or interfered with, and you come up with an analysis of the information that reveals the particular makes of car that seem more prone to it than others.
You saw here.
With what result here, Dwayne?
The results in the top five that I've got is the Toyota Accuras, the first one, Mazda Demios, Toyota Teslas, the Toyota Celica's the fourth, and then Subaru Legacy's the fifth.
And often they are just abandoned, burnt out.
Yep.
What's going on in people's minds to do that?
Well, either it's classed as stolen and theft and recovery, And then what they do is once the vehicles are sitting on the solar road, burnt out and that, then the council will go along and throw a tape over it, or the cops will come over for a tape over it. And then either that people lose their cars and got no insurance.
It's sad because it disrupts people's lives so much, as well as the expense, of course.
Yep.
Do you think there could be improved ways of dealing with it?
Well, there's no ways you can actually improve it either. That the either that people that, you know, got garages, they can put their cars in the garages. 50% of vehicles that 50% of the motor vehicles that get stolen every week just accumulate it.
You heard my comments earlier on the cars and what happened with that ute. just a bit of what was your comment?
Well, the police minister has got no clue at all on what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, that the impounding, there's so many cars have been impounded at the moment. There's been so many cars that are sitting in the impound yard that the people do not click. And it accumulates it, and then what they do is they go straight out and find another second-hand car and then start doing it over again.
Well, we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks. Thank you, Dwayne. And before we go this afternoon, a quick comment from Trevor. G'day, mate. How are we?
Oh,
just pull your chair up.
I look quite easy.
Trevor's talk.
Hi. Well, talking about cyclists, as I normally do every week, this week was the first. I never saw one cyclist all week.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an experience with a fire engine a few days ago in Tristan Street, on the hill of Tristan Street, coming up from Ward Street. Large fire engine behind me, siren blaring, but I had nowhere to pull over because of the concrete slabs. And it started honking its horn at me. Luckily, a car had pulled up a little further along, and there's just enough gap for me to squeeze in. But the fire engine didn't have much room to overtake me, having taken that action.
I support those drivers. Boy, do they have a tough job all over.
Because a lot of people don't intentionally try to hinder them, but they don't want to steer into a concrete slab either.
Are you still surviving winter, Trevor?
Oh, well, I'll be glad when summer comes. It's in my dreams at the moment.
Oh, well, we'll see you in shorts.
Yeah, who knows? But another thing I wanted to talk about, I'm no longer a voice in the wilderness. I was watching Q&A today on TV, and the councils are going to try and put a cap on city council spending instead of wasting money in one situation and spending millions of dollars on bus stops by putting a garden on top of the roof.
Yeah.
Well, how ridiculous is that?
Well, I did see a picture of our Mayor, Paula Southgate, and down in Wellington. I don't think she's very impressed, or does she have a smile, Paula Southgate?
She's probably been a peculiar, all the expenditure going
anyway,
on.
Anyway, yeah, no, a lot of
that Founders Theatre should never have been pulled down. It was a landmark of Hamilton. They should treasure it like they do in other countries around the world where they look after the heritage buildings.
Anyway, we'll talk to Gary. Thank you, Trevor. We'll talk to Gary Schofield again next week. We've run out of time. I wanted to talk about things going on at the Democratic Convention with the young son of the vice president nominee. What a great guy he was, and the rubbish he got from social media. Thanks for your company. We're time to go.
I love a lassie, a bonny, bonny lassie. She's as pure as the lily in the dell. She's as sweet as the heather, the bonny purple heather. Mary, my Scotch little bell. I love a lassie, a bonny, bonny lassie. She's as pure. Sweet as the heather, the bonny purple heather, Mary, my Scotch bluebell.
simple Johnny Raw. For everything my mother.
Yes, Robert Wilson and Andy Stewart leading out the Whitehead Club in a Harry Lauder medley. It's 2 minutes to one. Sorry, 2 minutes to two. Watch your clock. We'll catch you next week. Have a great week, won't you?
This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.